It's Super Bowl week, Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta. Who better to break it down than the Hall of Famer himself, Ray Dittinger of WIP and NBC Sports Philadelphia. Thanks for joining me, Ray. Real quick, I want to get your thoughts before we talk about the Patriots and Rams game. I want to get your thoughts on the conference championship game since I really didn't have a chance to speak to you about both of those. First, let's start with the NFC, and it's fascinating because I remember in one of our prior conversations, you had brought up the state of officiating in the NFL. And the big thing from that game, the Rams-Saints game, was the no call on Nickell Robey-Coleman late in the fourth quarter when he should have been called for either pass interference or helmet-to-helmet or both. What was your impression of that big no call that really everybody's still talking about now? And we haven't even at this point on Wednesday of Super Bowl week heard from Roger Goodell on that matter yet.
Yeah, well, the commissioner has kind of gone underground on that one. He's not going to be able to avoid it because he has to do his press conference down in Atlanta, and that'll be the first question that's asked, and that's probably going to be take up a lot of the time there, and it should. I mean, it would be bad enough if that were just one isolated bad non-call in a big game, but it's really just the culmination of a season in which we've had poor officiating really from week one, and every week there's been some game that's been decided or influenced certainly by a poor judgment and a poor call by an official that just build up week after week after week the frustration. And then it caps off that in the conference championship game you have the most egregious non-call of the season. And now that's all anybody wants to talk about. And from a league standpoint, this is really bad. You had two really good games for the championship that Sunday. Had back-to-back really good games. Both went to overtime. And yet, on Monday morning, what's everybody talking about? Everybody's talking about the officiating. I mean, it's reached the point where it's beyond a crisis now. It's bordering on a scandal. And the NFL has to figure out some way to address it. And the commissioner, I don't know what he's going to say, but he's certainly going to have to address it when he finally meets the media this week.
No, there's no question about that. And on the AFC title game, locally at least here, one of the big stories was the fact that Andy Reid is now 1-5 as a head coach in conference championship games. Ray, I'll be honest. I tried to find an angle where Reid could take the blame, but really he couldn't in this one, other than maybe the slow start for the Chiefs. What do you make of Reid's lack of success in conference title games?
Well, some of it has been bad luck, but some of it has been poor coaching. I mean, there's been a little bit of both. When you have that many games, they don't all play out exactly the same, and you lose, but you don't lose for the same reason over and over again. Back in his time with the Eagles, I mean, there were a couple of games there where, I definitely thought they should have won, and I thought Andy's play calling and some of his clock management issues did betray him and cost him those games. Here with the Chiefs, it's been different. It's been almost a different story every time. This game, I just don't know that you could lay this on him. The first half, the offense was really bottled up, which was very unusual because their offense had been dynamic all year. And I really thought they let the Patriots really kind of control them in the first half. A lot of it had to do just with the ball control. The Patriots came in with the clear purpose of just trying to run the ball a ton and control the clock and keep that Chiefs offense off the field. And they did a great job of it in the first half. But then in the second half, the Chiefs came out and did a better job. And when they got the ball, they brought in some new things. You have to give Andy some credit for that. They made some offensive adjustments. And in the second half, the young quarterback started to really click, and then they got it going. And you really had a ball game in the second half. But you go to overtime, and one of the things that I thought was with the way the Patriots had finished up, and as much as they had controlled the ball, they ran almost 100 plays in that game, that if they got the ball first in overtime, I had a feeling they were going to take it right down the field and score, because it just looked to me like the Chiefs' defense was just totally gassed, and that was the way it played out.
Do you think that rule needs to change, the overtime rule? Do you think that no matter what, both teams need a chance to touch the ball at least once?
I don't really think so. I know a lot of people feel very strongly about that. And certainly the way that game ended made people think that, because there weren't a whole lot of people outside of New England that were rooting for the Chiefs. So rooting for the Patriots, I mean. So I know there's a very strong sentiment towards that. But you look at the other game. The other game went to overtime. And the Saints won the toss. But Drew Brees threw an interception, and the Rams got the ball, and they won. So, you know, if you look at the numbers over time now since they've gone to this, the team that wins the toss wins 52% of the time. It's not. I think people have this prevailing idea that the team that wins the toss wins automatically, that it's a one-possession game. And that's not really true. It's almost a 50-50 split. So, and you saw that again on Sunday. You know, the Saints won the toss, but, you know, give the Rams credit. They came up with a big play. They got the interception. They won the game. So I'm okay with it. I understand the frustration, and I understand there are a lot of people that didn't want to see the Patriots in the Super Bowl again. That's probably part of it. But I think the rule's okay. Just go play. If you didn't win the toss, just go play defense and get the ball back.
Well, the Patriots are back again, Ray, as you just said. This is their ninth appearance since 2002, which is remarkable. And this isn't really even one of their better teams. How are they back? Simply put, how?
It's funny because there were many points during the season where people were writing off the Patriots, talking about the fact that they looked older, they looked slower, that Tom Brady wasn't the same player anymore. And they had a couple troubling losses. You know, normally they were a team that built a lot of momentum and played their, they would lose a few games early, but then they'd get to December and they would really, everything would fall into place and they'd really hit their stride and go into the playoffs strong. That really wasn't the case. I mean, they lost a couple games in December and didn't look very good in doing it. So, but, you know, they're still the Patriots. And when you get them in a big game, they have the experience and they have the players to. They know how to win. They know how to win these games. And that's kind of what it comes down to. They're different. It's a different Patriot team than it's been in the past. We've seen the Patriots go to the Super Bowl and Brady go to the Super Bowl in years when he almost literally threw the ball on every play. I mean, they had some years there where he was averaging almost 50 pass attempts a game. That's not the case now. And I don't know if it's a concession to him being 41 years old or as much as it is just a reflection of the team that they have right now. But they've got three really good running backs, and they use them all interchangeably. And they've now become a team that they run the ball a ton. I mean, down the stretch here and certainly in the postseason, they have been a run-first team. They've come out and they've run a lot of I formation. They run a lot of what they call 21 personnel, which is two running backs and only one tight end. Hardly anybody in the NFL does that anymore. And they've become, interestingly enough, they've become kind of a power football team. Their offensive line's playing really well, and the rookie running back, Sony Michel, has really played well. And we all know at this point what James White can do as a receiver out of the backfield. So this is a very different kind of Patriot team. The defense is okay. It's not dominant the way other Patriot defenses have been. And offensively now, they've built this kind of power offense that's taken a little bit of the pressure off Tom Brady and made him more of a play-action quarterback, and he seems to be thriving in that role.
They've practically owned the NFL for the past two decades, since the century turned, Ray. Have you ever seen a team, a dynasty, dominate like that in this league?
Well, we saw the Steelers of the 70s win the Super Bowl 4 out of 6 years. That's one of the great dynasties. We saw the Lombardi Packers in the decade before that, in the 60s, win 5 times. Those were, if you start a bit, you're talking about the NFL dynasties, you'd probably have to start with those teams. But I don't think anybody has sustained it over this length of time the way the Patriots have. That's what's remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a great run by the Lombardi Packers. That's why people talk about them forever. The Steel Curtain in Pittsburgh, people talk about that forever. But they were a decade, and that's pretty good. But when you're talking with the Patriots, you're talking about two decades, and that's remarkable, especially in an era which Lombardi and the Steelers never had to deal with, which was free agency.
Hmm.
You're dealing with a whole different set of circumstances now with free agency, where there's a lot more player movement, and it's harder to put together a team and keep that team together. Guys move and change every year. So to be able to stay on top the way the Patriots have done for 20 years, I don't know that we're ever going to see anything like it again. And even though people hate it and there are people that are tired of it and they're just saying, oh, no, not the Patriots again, I'd sort of take the other view of it and I'm saying, hey, man, you're looking at history here. I mean, you're probably never going to see a team do what this team's doing again. So I'm more on the appreciative side of it.
What do you make of the Rams? They're kind of a team of the future, obviously of the present now, because they're competing for a Super Bowl on Sunday. What do you make of Sean McVay and Jared Goff? It's interesting how this Super Bowl is 66-year-old Belichick against 33-year-old McVay and 41-year-old Brady against 24-year-old Goff.
Yeah, that's the interesting aspect of that. I mean, it's an irresistible angle for the media covering the game. As you have the all-time great coach and the all-time great quarterback going against the new wave, super young head coach and the emerging young star quarterback. It's perfect casting, really. And McVay and Goff look like they should be playing in Los Angeles. I mean, they really do look like they walked off the set of Warner Brothers. It really is kind of funny that way. Going up against the guy in the hoodie, it really is kind of a Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader thing, which is pretty irresistible. And I'm sure the TV networks are going to get a lot of mileage out of that this weekend. But the Rams are, they're a good team. I mean, they're probably a little ahead of schedule. I didn't think they were quite here yet, but they've made tremendous progress in just a couple of years. And it's obvious that Sean McVay really knows how to coach. I mean, the Rams, there were a lot of people when they hired him at his young age that sort of said, whoa, I mean, a head coach in the NFL, really, at that age? And there are a lot of questions being asked, but not now. I mean, it's obvious that he's a really, really good offensive strategist and a tremendous play caller. And he made a really good decision when he got the job in hiring Wade Phillips to run the defense. And so Sean McVay, I mean, he doesn't even try to run the whole team. I mean, he's not one of these guys that has a problem delegating. I mean, he's purely an offensive coach. He just coaches that one side of the football, and he just turns the defense over to Wade Phillips, who has been a coach in this league and won a lot of games for a long time. So they're a sound team. I mean, the offensive line is good. They've got really good backs. The addition of C.J. Anderson to the backfield to complement Todd Gurley has really helped. And on defense, they have the best defensive player in the NFL, and Aaron Donald, mm-hmm. in the middle of that line. And Ndamukong Suh, who they signed this year, who really was kind of a non-factor for most of the regular season, has started to play like Ndamukong Suh now in the playoffs. So they have two real big-time playmakers in the middle of that defense. And in my view, I think that's one of the real keys to this game on Sunday is Donald and Suh. And can they control the line of scrimmage, and can they get the pressure up the middle on Tom Brady? If they can be as dominant in this game as they were in the NFC playoffs, then I think the Rams have a real chance.
I'm going to hit you up with one more before we get into the matchup. The Goff thing interests me because Carson Wentz and Jared Goff are attached at the hip, 1-2 in 2016. Wentz, because of injury, has yet to play in a postseason game. Goff, who I think at the beginning of their careers we assumed was behind Wentz, is about to play in a Super Bowl and may be at the podium actually winning a Super Bowl compared to Wentz, who watched Foles. How much should Goff's success factor into how Eagles fans view Wentz?
I don't think it'll change people's opinion that much, in Philadelphia at least. I think the people in Philadelphia have seen enough of Wentz. I think they know what he's capable of being and doing. I mean, we saw Wentz and Goff go head-to-head last year in Los Angeles, the game that Wentz ultimately was injured and didn't finish. And you saw the two of them together on the same field. And I think most people in Philadelphia would have said that Wentz got the better of that. And when they were both coming out of college in that same graduating class, on my grading system, I had Goff ahead of Wentz. I did. Largely because I knew that Goff had played a higher level of competition, and I really wasn't sure, as impressive as Wentz was on tape watching him going into the draft, playing in North Dakota State against that lower level of competition, I just didn't know how to evaluate it. I mean, I think I looked really good on tape, but my question I kept asking was, well, who's he playing against? At least with Goff, I knew. So to me, it was a very close call. I thought both guys were really good and certainly worthy of being drafted high in the draft. But if I had been in the Howie Roseman chair and had to make the pick, I probably would have taken Goff. Now he had a brutal first year with the Rams. But since he's joined up with Sean McVay and he's been put into a system that more suits his skills and he's been surrounded by some better players, you've seen him take off. And I really do think that the game against the Saints, the NFC Championship game, was a was a huge step forward game for Jared Goff. I mean, that was a lot of pressure. It's the biggest game he's ever played in, for sure. He's down in New Orleans playing in a very hostile atmosphere in a loud building against Drew Brees, a team that had never lost a playoff game at home, all of that stuff, and goes to overtime, and he overcame. I mean, he made the throws at the end that got them in position to win the game. So I really think that that was a big growing up day for Jared Goff, and it's a good thing because he's going to be playing in an even bigger game this Sunday for higher stakes, but I think he's better equipped now to deal with it.
Well, he's certainly going to be playing in a bigger game. What matchups should we watch this weekend, Ray, and what's your prediction?
I really do think that the key matchup is in the interior of the line. It's Donald and Sue, the two defensive tackles for the Rams, against that Patriot offensive line, which has been very good. The Patriots offensive line, I mean, you're not allowing Tom Brady's hardly getting touched. I mean, you go back to the AFC Championship game. One of the keys to that game was the fact that going up against a Kansas City defense that was way up in the league rankings in terms of sacking the quarterback, and they had some big-time pass rushers, Tom Brady was hardly touched in that game. And now a lot of it had to do with the fact that they ran the ball well, but when Brady needed to throw the ball, he had time to throw it. Now that's going to be this week. Will that offensive line be able to control Donald and Sue? Because they have been very, very good in the postseason, and Donald has been good basically every week. So I think if Donald and Sue can win the battles inside and collapse the pocket and put pressure on Brady, then the Rams, I think, have a chance to stop that offense. But if the offensive line is able to hold them off, give Brady the time that they've been giving him really throughout the whole postseason, and he's able to stand there and pick his spots and find Edelman anytime he needs it and dump the ball off to White, if Brady can play, stand in that pocket nice and clean all day, then I think that's going to be the key for the Patriots. Honestly, I think the game almost comes down to that.
Mm. And what's your prediction?
It's hard for me to go against the Patriots in this game. It really is. I mean, they've been here so many times. The experience factor is real. People talk about a Super Bowl experience, how important is that? I think it is important. Now, last year the Eagles were able to overcome it and beat the same Patriots team. I just don't know if the Rams quite have that same kind of magic. And I really do get the feeling that, as crazy as it sounds, and as much as most people don't buy into it, I really think the Patriots are riding a little bit of that underdog thing that the Eagles did last year. I mean, it seems nonsensical to talk about a team that's accomplished what they've accomplished being the quote-unquote underdog. I mean, it's almost laughable. But they believe it. And I think that makes them even more dangerous. And you know, I think the Rams are going to be here for a while, and I think they'll get other opportunities. I'm not taking anything away from what McVay and Goff have accomplished, but I just like the way the Patriots are playing right now. And the matchups, most of the matchups seem to me to favor the Patriots. And obviously, if you have to choose, and we have to choose right now, it's hard for me to ever choose against Brady and Belichick. So I'm going to say the Patriots, and I'm going to say 28-24.
Patriots 28-24. Ray, I could talk football with you all day. Thank you for the entire season. Thanks for coming on and talking at length on this topic. I really appreciate it. Have a good offseason. Can't wait till next year.
I look forward to it, David. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray. Hall of Famer Ray Dininger of WIP and NBC Sports Philadelphia.